Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
If you or someone you know is affected by human trafficking, call the Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888. Text INFO to 233-733. And please visit our website for information on resources and support. I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
What's Next? And today with us, we have a couple of returning guests with us this morning. Saladin Allah, Director of Community Engagement at the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center, and also now a professor at the Niagara University. Saladin, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Kelly Diane Galloway of Project Mona's House, the founder of Project Mona's House. Thanks for being with us as well.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, what's really interesting, I mean, we got a lot to talk about because you guys are involved in so many different things, but what was really intriguing is, you know, we were back with Saladin up at the Underground Railroad Center back in maybe the late spring, early summer, mm-hmm. and you were telling us about this organization that organizing this great trip to Africa. A couple of weeks later, Kelly was in our studios for another conversation and happened to drop the fact that she was going to be going to Africa as well. So, well, you should go with Saladin. That's who I'm going with. So, so that coincidence there, but it's a fascinating thing because, you know, to me, you were talking about a place that is, it's amazing, though the world is small, Africa remains a place of mystery, of, and I would have to say, and I'll let you follow this up, a place that's very much misunderstood. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think any place that people have not been is usually misunderstood, and that also is reflective of the people who live there. And the landscape and the geography and every aspect of the culture. So it's not just really Africa, but you can say that consistently, maybe even about different states here in America. People have never been to,
right?
And they may have an attitude that it's that distant from who they are and what they've actually experienced, but definitely the continent of Africa as well.
So for you, this is the third time there?
Yes.
Okay. Kelly, how about for you?
It was my second time.
Second time. Okay. So you don't necessarily have those bright first-timer eyes, but you brought people for the first time. What were some of the responses?
Yeah. It was a group. So we brought a group of 21 people, mm-hmm. and it was our first time bringing so many young people.
Yeah.
And I think it was almost everybody's first time ever going to Africa. Was it anybody?
Absolutely. No one in our group had ever been there before.
Okay.
So, I mean, I just want to highlight some of the things that the children said. I was like, one of the questions we asked them when we interviewed them was like, did this trip to Tanzania, Africa, did it meet your expectations? Was it below your expectations or did it exceed? Everybody said that it exceeded their expectations because a lot of the things that they knew or thought they knew about Africa, they saw in Hollywood or in media.
Right.
And in the media. And it was completely the opposite. They got to see the nature. They got to see the educational system. They got to visit one of the most beautiful beaches and swim in the beaches with dolphins and turtles and things like that. And no, I don't think anybody else besides Saladin climbed a banana tree, but they got to explore the city and learn about different spices that were native to that part of the continent. And so I think everybody, especially the children, were blown away and amazed. And they were like, we can't wait to come back because honestly, it was about a week long trip, but it just wasn't even enough.
Right. Where exactly did you guys go?
So we flew into Kilimanjaro, and then from there we went to Arusha. So we traveled in various different locations in mainland Tanzania. We went to a place called Ngorongoro Crater. We went to the Serengeti. We actually stayed in the Serengeti.
Mm.
Now, for people who don't know what the Serengeti is, if you watch National Geographic specials and they show the Great Migration with the wildebeest and the zebra who are traveling from Tanzania to Kenya or back and forth from Kenya to Tanzania, and they're traveling across this area where water and crocodiles are, we were in the Serengeti.
Mm. Crocodiles.
You know? Yeah, we were in the Serengeti. So we had a chance to go there, and we also traveled to Zanzibar. Mm. So we had a chance to experience all of the various different elements of Africa. And that's one reason why we selected this location as well, because people oftentimes think that Africa is a country.
Right.
That's
when
right.
It is not a country, it is a continent.
Lots
that
of
is composed of. It is so large, you can put the United States in Africa three times. Mm. It's that large, you know, and because of its size, there are locations in Africa where they don't have lions that are native.
Mm-hmm.
People that live there, they've never seen lions before unless they were actually in a zoo. So we went to a location where we can actually see the wildlife that Africa is noted for. Zebras and lions and elephants and giraffes, and we wanted to go to that location to get a full experience of what people think Africa actually is. And it had a various different landscapes as well. So we went to grasslands, we went to areas where there was forest, we went to the beaches. So yes, we had a chance to experience the totality of what people would think Africa actually is.
Let's explore that just a little bit, because I'm sure as you're talking to everybody about this, there are people who probably have apprehension about maybe going to Africa. And I want you to, if you can, just take us through what maybe you sense or heard were apprehensions and how those are overcome when you actually make this trip.
Mm. I think as somebody who takes people on trips, like as a part of what I do, a lot of people's apprehension is a lot of people never leave their communities.
Right.
And so to go all across the world, all the way across the world in another hemisphere, it can be a little bit intimidating. How long is the flight? Can I really afford it? Mm-hmm. Is this reasonable for me? Maybe this is something somebody else should do. Well, are the lions going to get me?
And, right, which would be top of my list.
Is it dangerous?
Right.
What am I going to eat? And there's all these questions that may challenge or expand people's idea of what culture is, mm-hmm. and even challenge them to come out of their own cultural norms. And Saladin was telling us about how many people really never leave the cities and the countries, and how many people don't really travel outside of their own state in the United States. But we worked really hard to make this trip. We did a lot of Zoom calls to normalize a lot of the things that may seem a little bit different for people, and to warn them in advance. Not a warning because it's something dangerous, but hey, like this is what the food we eat. This is what we'll be eating. This is the language that they'll be speaking. These are some of the things that we'll be able to buy over there. And so we wanted to be able to answer some questions to make people a little bit more comfortable using information. But information, acquiring that information is nothing like actually right. experiencing it. So, mm-hmm. But we tried our very best to get people acquainted with the continent before they even step foot on it.
You mentioned language. Mm-hmm. What languages were you encountering?
So Tanzania is the safari capital. So people typically in America speak one language. When you go outside of this country, people generally speak at least two different languages.
Right.
That is common. So when you go to a place like Tanzania, people take the extra effort and initiative to learn many of the languages of people who are going to be traveling there.
Yep.
So they speak multiple languages there, and not even including some of their tribal native tongue, but German, Japanese, Chinese, English, Spanish, Italian. They mm-hmm. speak all of the various different languages there, including Swahili.
Oh, wow.
So there's no language barrier when you go there.
So it was not a problem in terms of communicating at all.
No, very not simple. At all.
Okay, not uncommon for places where there are a high level of tourism. But on the other side of the coin, Swahili is not something that you encounter in many places at all.
Yeah.
Did you gain an understanding of it?
So the beautiful thing about that is, when we celebrate Kwanzaa here in America, the language that is incorporated within the celebration of Kwanzaa is Swahili.
Okay.
So we learn about Umoja and Asante and all of these different words that they speak as a part of their native tongue there. So we had some sense of being familiar because we've been exposed to it here in America. Right. So it was literally like traveling home for many of us.
And if you've ever been under the teaching or the tutelage of Queen Mother Eva Doyle from kindergarten, she gave us a book that said that was like Jambo means hello. And so from kindergarten, you started learning just different things about Swahili. And I never thought that, I don't think as a kindergartner, I would have thought that, hey, I might be able to use some of these words 30 years from now.
Yeah, my 6-year-old, 3 days ago, she literally had a conversation with me and said, Dad, I want to go to Tanzania so that I can see how they celebrate Kwanzaa there.
Whoa.
She's 6 years old and said that. And I said, you had a chance to see how they celebrate it because that is a part of their everyday life.
Oh, okay.
They live these principles and values out. And I said, did you see the sense of unity that our people had there? She said, yeah. I said, what about the collective work and responsibility that people had and how they worked together? She said, yeah. And I said, those are the principles of Kwanzaa. We're being reintroduced to those principles here in America because many of us have been disconnected from those principles and those values.
That's really a fascinating element of this. So maybe let's expand on how you saw that play out, those different principles. I think that's, again, I mean, I feel like the light bulb just went off in my head here, but expand on how you saw that play out.
Yeah. For one, you didn't see people driving down the street with road rage. That is not a sense of what's normalcy when it comes to the people that live there. They don't argue with each other in public or raise their voices. It is very, very rare for you to see anything like that.
Wow.
And there's a sense of community that they live that is a part of their everyday life that you oftentimes don't see here. You see a lot of these principles and values being reinforced in some of our families and in our churches as an institution. But the larger community is oftentimes not common to see everyday people who are living like this. So it was an experience for people to be able to be immersed in an environment where some of the things that they thought were possible or things that they thought were impossible is something that people are literally doing outside of these borders of what we call America.
Yeah. Kelly, I see you nodding your head vigorously there. So you want to add to that a little bit?
I think that you could see a lot of what Saladin is talking about, especially in the educational system that that we were exposed to. So we visited the Sikila Primary School. We brought gifts, a day of celebration and love, and introducing people to the work that has been done. Saladin has been working with that team to start a foundation so that they have like things like clean drinking water and things like that. I think sometimes it's you don't expect to be. I think that was the first moment in our entire trip where people were just bawling like with tears coming out their eyes. So we landed in Tanzania. We were on the banana farm, and our first time out in our trip itinerary was going to the Sikila Primary School. Afar off, you're in this bus and you see it. It just looks like, I don't even know what it looks like. It looks like a lot of something in the distance, and the closer and closer you get to it, you see the streets flooded with children celebrating the fact that you're coming, and they're dancing and they're shouting and they're screaming. Some are holding Tanzanian flags, some are holding United States flags, and you get, and the bus gets closer and closer and the sounds get louder and louder, and you are just so overwhelmed with love and emotion that the adults, the children are so excited just to connect with you. Mm. It's a sense of family and it's a sense of unity that even though we may be separated by seas and oceans, there's really no separation. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, welcome home.
Wow.
And it was such a beautiful time. And I just think that everybody should at least have that experience at least once in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. To be genuinely welcome somewhere and people see you for who you are. And not have an expectation of what it is that you're bringing or it's not transactional.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was the first time that people actually felt that sense of genuinely being welcome. And like I said, we see these elements within our institutions, our churches, our other organizations that we've established in this country to strive to hold fast to these principles and these values. But you don't typically see it in the larger dominant society.
Right. Yeah. And I'm wondering, it's interesting. So like you said, there's your expectations change when you go there. As you were talking and communicating with people who live in Tanzania, did you have a sense of things about the United States that they didn't quite understand correctly or that you changed their impression of? I'd like to hear about that.
So on one of my experiences, I was speaking to some of the locals and they were asking me questions about being black in America. And I was explaining to them some of the landscape and racism. And while I'm looking at their facial expressions, while I'm striving to explain it, it was difficult for them to understand it because they don't live in an area where they're discriminated against based upon the color of their skin or their religion or anything like that, their gender. Those things don't exist there. And if they do, it is an export from America and some of these Western countries. So anyway, I'm having this conversation and I'm striving to explain to them about what racism is and about police violence and some of these things. And in the midst of me explaining this, I realized that I brought more baggage with me to Africa than I actually brought with me.
Right.
And I literally stopped myself because it felt like I was infecting them with an idea that did not exist in their land. Because when they look at their school books, they see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When they watch television, they see themselves telling themselves what the weather looks like. And they look at my daughter a few weeks ago asked me, was there police in Tanzania? And I said, yeah, there were police there. And she said, I didn't see any police. Now, at this point, she just turned 6 years old and she's having this conversation with me. And I said, yeah, they were there. They just didn't distinguish themselves from the population and they don't operate the same way that they operate here in America. So she didn't even recognize a police presence or law enforcement there, right? So one of the main things is some of the ideas that we are indoctrinated to believe about ourselves and about each other here in America, they did not exist there and they don't exist in many other countries that I've traveled to. And that was one of the biggest things. And when I realized that I was having that conversation, I stopped and I said, you know what? I'm sitting here in tropical paradise. And I'm not going to have a conversation about something that I could turn on Fox News or CNN or some of these other TV stations to tell me about.
Right.
No, I'm here and I'm present.
What about, are there more? It sounds like it sounds like almost from the moment you land that you're taking in, there's a whole, besides what you see, there seems to be a spiritual undertaking that's going on. I'm wondering if there are other things that you can share that you experienced there during your trip. I know that's kind of a general question, but I'm interested to explore that a little bit more. Because what you just said there about having that conversation about racism and really realizing, like, I'm just bringing poison to these people.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a fascinating, it kind of turns the whole idea of these issues upside down. How about for you, Kelly? Mm-hmm. Anything like that?
So not this time, but the first time I got to Tanzania, I believe we all met in Amsterdam, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got off the plane and I just land and my feet just touched the ground, like tears just started welling up in my eyes. I don't really know why. I think I was just overwhelmed because I've already lived and traveled all over the world, and I think put my hand to do some really incredible work. But that was my first time on the continent. And it was very moving for me. And I saw the same exact thing happen. Saladin and a group of people got there before I did this time. And then I brought the second group. And I just sat back and watched to see if they would have the same reaction. And they did. Like, when they got there, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that we're there. We're there at night. You could look up, as you said, you could see stars. And it just was like a breath of fresh air. I think that for me, there's a different kind of rest that you get when you don't have to continuously prove that you're worthy or that you're enough. And based upon just the color of my skin. So I'm a black girl from Buffalo, New York. I speak five languages. I've built things all over the world that you can actually go to. But still, in a lot of circles, I'm treated as if I'm not enough, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm not intelligent enough, or my, you know, and I constantly have to prove, like, you know, but I don't feel like I have to prove anything, and I don't. But constantly, I didn't have to do that there. It was no, who are you? Where are you from? What school did you go to? What part of town are you from? Who's your parents? What church did you grow up in? Who are you connected to? It was none of that.
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah. So you felt a similar
sense
of relief, I guess, for lack of a better term? Yeah.
Absolutely. People are not quantifying you. And it's not this transactional type of relationship that you typically see in this society that we live in over here. You walk into a room, people are not looking you up and down to kind of see, you know, what you have and what you don't have. It's the first time in my life that I sat in a room with my back to the door. And I do not sit with my back to the door. I have to sit where I can see the entrances and the exits. That is where I'm most comfortable, at least here in this society. That was the first time that I went to a place that I could sit with my back to the door and not feel any type of threat of violence or any sense of insecurity. The first time.
Wow. That's... a lot comes out of this trip. We're talking this morning with Saladin Allah and also Kelly Galloway. Got a couple other things we want to get into, but before we wrap the segment, I want to get a couple more of your impressions from your trip to Africa. So you're out in the Serengeti, and you called it glamping. I'll let how glamorous it could be out there, but at the same time, you know, you're out in the middle. Now, you're prey. You're not predators anymore. You're prey. Yeah. So what was going on, like, as you're sleeping in the Serengeti? What's happening?
Well, one thing I would say is animals don't carry guns.
Mm-hmm.
So you usually have more of a potential for something happening to you in this country than to be in a natural landscape where animals don't pose any kind of threat of violence to you. And you are around the tribes, the Maasai tribe, who live in that area, who we were amongst as well, who have a historical and a traditional relationship with the wildlife. So, you know, that's one of the misconceptions that some people have. People, when I've gone there, be safe. Don't, you know,
I'm like,
You have more of a threat of something happening to you being out past dusk in different environments where people may carry guns or they're involved in other different type of things. You have more of a possibility.
So you felt safe the whole time?
Oh, way more safe than being here in America.
Wow.
Way more safe.
And your guides, for lack of a term, they're watching out for you. They're making sure they know the land. They know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think anybody really knows, like, what's going to happen and what's going to come on the campgrounds, right?
Okay.
But they do, like Saladin, you mentioned earlier when we were speaking, that they do have rifles, but they don't use those rifles to shoot the animals. They just use it to scare them, or, you know. And then you just be responsible. Like, you're not going to come. They walk you to your tents. And if you need something, they come get you and escort you until, you know, the sun rises and it because you can't see in the nighttime. But I think everybody on the trip will tell you Kelly does not have a problem going to sleep.
Like, she was asleep anywhere. She was sleeping in that bumpy safari jeep.
Yeah. Like. So when I lay my head down on that pillow, it is over. I am knocked out. But I mean, like the glamping experience, I think it is beautiful. They built like these rooms. They built rooms and closets and bathrooms out of like, I don't know what that type of plastic was.
It's like a tarp.
Okay.
Yeah. Very, very big.
Canopy like, beds. Yeah. It's nice. And then they host you for dinner, and it is like the most amazing meal. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Was that pumpkin soup or something? Mm-hmm. It was. Yep. It is so delicious. And then for... then you have like another place you can go just to kind of like hang out and decompress, and they just stay up with you until you're ready to go to bed. But the year, not this year, but the year before, like I was kind of scared because it was this one time we were going to the bathroom and there were lionesses right outside the bathroom.
Right.
But you think like, but if they're not hungry, they don't attack.
Yeah.
They just wanted water. Okay. And so I'm like, I'm looking at everybody around. It's like, and I'm like, and this is a video I have online. I'm like, Saladin, come back. And he just keep walking closer to the lions. And I'm like, yeah. Well, I guess I should go too. Yeah. But I was like, you only live once. But I'm telling you, it was so fun. I have never been within, I would say, 20 feet of a lion without any barriers.
Sure, sure.
And they look different.
They are huge.
They're not behind nothing. They're huge.
Wow.
And then you think like, man, one jump, they could be over here. But again, I think even the way that television portrays wildlife is also not what we got to witness. Now, I'm not saying go out there and play, you know, tic-tac-toe with the lions.
Don't go feed them dog biscuits, yeah.
And as Saladin just mentioned, like the Maasai tribe that lives amongst them. And like, this is just like... we don't hear about that. I never grew up. I didn't even know what the Maasai tribe was or that the Maasai tribe even existed until he brought me to Tanzania for the first time. And so, I know that that story scares people, but I promise you, like, it was still safe. You still had all the rangers around. You went back,
so I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah. But it's just, it's like you just never know what you're going to get. And so even if you go two or three or four times, you never know, because our drivers, to the point, like, I don't remember exactly what animal it was, but our photographer was trying to get a shot of an animal, but the van driver was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. But that's what he does all the time, every day. And wow. So he's like, I can't believe it. So he trying to pull his phone out. I was like, you got to stop right here. We got to get this shot. I said, we'll share the shot with you. And so he's like, okay. But it's because like nature is never the same every day.
Yeah.
It's something beautiful to behold every single time you step onto the land. And so... I'm grateful for that experience.
And that's just one of the experiences in the totality of our trip. Like Kelly mentioned, we visit the Sakila Primary School. We also are literally staying on a fully sustainable eco farm that grows 15 different types of bananas. It has organic gardens. It's 70 acres right in front of a place called Mount Meru, which is the second largest mountain in Tanzania, which has natural water that you can just go up to and drink water out of a stream.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so they get a chance to experience sustainable living, where they have cows on a property where they extract methane gas from the dung that they also utilize as fertilizer, and it powers the entire property. Like, they have an opportunity to see that it's possible, right? Where people are not deliberately polluting the soil or the air or the water. And we also travel to Zanzibar.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, people have an opportunity to just have an experience of a lifetime. And what was also important for us is to connect with the locals who are there. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes you have foreigners, whether they're from America or from Europe or from Asia, that come to these tropical paradises, and they have the capital to invest in hotels and other businesses. And then they utilize the locals as fronts for their business. And you think that you're getting an actual experience culturally, but it's usually a foreigner behind the scenes who's actually controlling that aspect of their local economy. So it was important for us to literally connect with our people there so that we can make sure that we have that type of relationship where we're helping them develop while we're actually going there at the same time. So all of the people that we connect with and the things that we do are organized by people who are Tanzanians, people that actually live there.
And I don't know if we talked, if it, we touched upon it during the conversation before we went on the air. Did you say you were working with some individuals there to try to help establish a foundation where certain things and certain resources can be shifted there, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, so through the Sakila Primary School, we were able to bring water to the school. We were able to, through one of our colleagues, Rob, he's based out of California, that has traveled with us twice at this point. He was able to secure laptops. We brought over 60 laptops to the school, and they were able to actually set up a computer lab at their school. And that's, you know, one thing that we consistently do as well.
But they only ask for like 12, right? Mm-hmm. And then so just when they open the bags, they're like, more? It was so, yeah, it was beautiful.
And they constantly send us updates. So the currency exchange rate is a lot different in Tanzania. They use Tanzanian shillings. And to give you context, Tanzanian shillings are about 23 to 2400 of their dollars equals one of ours.
Mm.
So when we travel, we tell the group that's going with us, you don't have to bring $100 bills or $50 bills. You don't have to bring bills that size, because what we have access to here in America goes a lot further when you go to Tanzania. So we have an opportunity to do much more there than what people may have an opportunity to do here. So yeah, so it was a beautiful experience, and we look forward to being able to continually provide these experiences, especially for our younger people, because I wish that I had this experience younger.
You brought that up then. So how do you think things would have been different for you if you had experienced that when, let's say, you're a teenager? Or, I mean, I know that's, again, it's a total hypothetical, but I sense this perspective shift from going there that has all sorts of meaning, especially with in terms of race and class and things along those lines. And I'm wondering about that. How you think that could have maybe changed things?
Well, one thing I tell people all of the time, the planet Earth is about 196,940,000 square miles. That's 57,255,000 square miles of land, 139,685,000 square miles of water. The United States is a little over 1% of the entire square mileage of the planet, a little over 1%. Most people in America don't even fully explore this country, which means that their ideas about humanity, about the environment, about what is possible, only exists in less than 1% of their lived experience in terms of the landscape of this planet. So that's limiting in a sense where you could be exposed to content through social media or what you've read in books or in school, but to have the lived experience is nothing in comparison to that. So I think that not only me, but children themselves being exposed to much more as early as possible, they also have the potential to think outside of that box and to explore possibilities that they normally wouldn't even think would be possible based upon the limits of the landscape that they typically travel. So I would definitely be much more different because I would have had earlier exposure to certain experiences, and lessening the unknown would make me less fearful of having more of these experiences. My two oldest daughters, they're both college graduates. They graduated from Howard University. One, she has her master's degree in forensic psychology. My other one, she's going to be defending for a doctorate's degree in a few months. And they are very well traveled, and they've been traveling since they were a lot young, a lot younger than me.
Sure.
And I can literally see from their experiences that they're much more of a global-minded citizen. Mm-hmm. And I think that that global-minded citizenry is something that exposing our children to these experiences as early as possible connects us to the human family in a way that people typically may not have access to.
Well stated. Well stated for sure. We are talking with Saladin Allah and also Kelly Galloway. Now, we've brought you in here for a variety of reasons, because you guys have a lot going on. But I definitely wanted to get into the Africa trip, and hopefully we can revisit it before the end of our hour. But I do want to touch on a couple of other things that you guys are involved with. Now, Kelly, Project Mona's House has its Free Them Gala. It's coming up this Friday.
It's coming up this Friday.
Yeah. All right. What's happening? I mean, you've been sitting here texting the whole time we've been on the air, so you must be busy putting things together.
So if we, a good segue from our Africa trip is a great question that you just posed to Saladin. So how would that have changed your perspective? So we are of the belief that exposure breeds desire. Right. And so we want to expose opportunities and experiences like this to our Young Women's Empowerment Academy and to younger individuals. Mm-hmm. Why is that important? Because it will breed in them a desire to realize that they are change makers. They have the ability and the power and authority, the bravery, the grit and the courage, if they would tap into themselves to really shift atmospheres. We teach all of the individuals that we work with that they are not thermometers, they are thermostats. They don't take temperature, they have the power and authority to change and shift it. And so experiences like this, experiences like the ones that we provide in our culture and college tours, when we take children all across the United States, some who've never even been on an airplane before, those are important, because a lot of the times the people that I work with, the girls that I work with, the youth that I serve, are part of vulnerable populations. It doesn't mean that they have been trafficked, but it does mean that they are statistically more likely to be trafficked or victims of sexual violence or perpetuators of crime or whatever studies show. But we also believe that we don't deny statistics, but we do have the power to change them. And so one thing about statistics, you can change them with hard work and things like that. And so as far as the Freedom Gala, our gala is threefold this year. We're opening an exhibit, and that exhibit is called What Were You Wearing? That highlights the commonality of sexual violence amongst men and women of all in all occupations and industries. And what we realize is that a lot of people don't get justice, they don't get healing, and they don't have the opportunity to experience freedom how the rest of us may, because they're silenced. They're silenced out of being made to fear the consequences of sharing their stories. They're made to believe that they're less than, and they live constantly in shame, because when I share my story, I'm now ostracized, and maybe I'm made to feel like more of a victim than what I initially felt when something happened to me. So when people walk into that exhibit, we'll tell the stories of everyday people. You'll see military uniforms. You'll see prom dresses. You'll see business suits. You'll see my story. This is the first time I've ever publicly shared my experience with sexual violence and assault. And you'll realize, and you'll see not just an outfit, but you'll see the setting in which it happened, which is a sofa, because I was in my own house that I paid the bills in, watching my own television when somebody entered my home. And I fought for 45 minutes. I fought for 45 minutes straight until that person eventually gave up. And I would have fought until I couldn't fight anymore. I didn't have a carpet on the floor, because I had just rolled it up because I was vacuuming because I had dogs. And I didn't feel like putting it back down at that moment. But you'll see the floor wet, because 45 minutes of fighting on your back, it was pools of sweat on the floor. And so And I didn't experience the judgment of when I told the people what happened to me, I was believed. But that same person had did that same thing to somebody else, and she was not believed. Mm. Mm. But I was more popular than her.
Wow.
Right? Mm. And so how many other individuals are like that? So you'll see children clothes, you'll see different things like that. And we don't want just people to be sad in that exhibit. We're going to give people a real call to action at the end of it to where you will be able to see the power that you have in yourself. And then once you enter inside the gala, you're going to hear Overcomers and Empower Girls hosted. And so it's going to be hosted by an overcomer that we've had the opportunity to work with. So she's flying in from California. Her name is Elizabeth Quiros. And you'll hear a little bit of her story, and we're bringing back Bella Rose Banks, one of our Empower Girl hosts from last year. And then we're also going to acknowledge some people in the community who have worked tirelessly to help me advance the cause for freedom in Western New York. We're still a small organization, even though we have a large impact, but we're going to be honoring Kay Sweet. That's what I call her. Her name is Kelsey Sweet. She does social media for the Buffalo Bills, but she worked her tail off all year getting the Bills to get everything off of our Amazon wish list. She, along with the Deion Dawkins Foundation, raised $10,000 for us in the summer, and she came and volunteered her time to teach our empowered girls how they can leverage their already addicted personalities to social media, but how they can leverage that to make an income for them and travel the world. We're honoring Miss Veronica McCullough, who pulls almost like 20 hours a week unpaid at Project Wanda's house. If we need her or her family, she doesn't volunteer her time. She volunteers her money. Demetria Stover, who has worked with me since the beginning as our house mother. When we have to sometimes, when one of our women might relapse and we have to go to the crack house to go get her, Dee Dee comes with me. She's not afraid, and sometimes situations can get a little funny, but Dee Dee, I can call Dee Dee at 11 o'clock, like, Dee Dee, we got to go get her. Dee Dee be like, all right, I'll meet you. I'm in the front, she in the back. We knocking on every single, and so she's with me. And then Jasmine Westbrook, she's getting our Volunteer of the Year Award for the work that she's done with our young girls. A lot of times you'll hear adult trafficking victims talk about how they became trafficking victims because they had a vulnerability of substance abuse. And so Jasmine has worked with our empowered girls to teach them about substance abuse and about menthol and how those things can lead to addiction, and has helped them learn about legislation, has allowed them to use their voices to advocate for laws to be passed that will protect them. And so those are the individuals that I'm honoring at this year's gala. It's going to be fun. It's not just going to be, you're going to cry, but you're also going to laugh. You're going to celebrate. And we're going to end the night with some dancing. And we just want to raise money for our Overcomer Support Fund. Obviously, we don't have huge facilities. We need more housing. We need money. Sometimes we struggle buying bus passes for the women to be able to get back and forth to our center. And because bus passes for a number of women can cost up to $1,200 a month for us, for a small organization like mine, that's a lot of money to us. And then we don't have vans where we can go pick up women. So it's not just women that live in Project Wanda's house that come to our center for programming, but it's just women also in different shelters, because obviously we can't house everybody. And so this year we hope to raise $150,000 for our Survivor Support Fund, our Overcomer Support Fund. And we hope to tell stories that matter. And we hope that people will find themselves somewhere in that story, whether it is I'm locking arms because maybe I've experienced that same thing, or maybe, Kelly, I can donate $10 or $30 a month to help with some bus passes, or maybe I can bring some food down there, because some of the women, not the one women that live in Project Wanda's house, by the time they reach our center on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, they're hungry. And so we don't have the money to buy food all the time, so we go to pantries and get food. And Miss Carissa, that's in our center, she'll fry up some eggs and cook some sausage, and we'll put some toast in our little makeshift. We don't have a kitchen, but we have hot plates, and we just make it work. And then also this is the first time that you will see almost all of our overcomers live and in action at this gala. And so it'd be a testament for people who've been coming to our galas, people who've been giving. I want them to be able to see the fruit of their labor. That these women came in one way and they are not that way anymore. They're homeowners, they're in healthy relationships, they got custody of their children back, they got charges dropped against them. And so this is what freedom is. And again, I tell everybody, if you really want to see human trafficking end, modern day slavery end, you got to bring the railroad back. You have to bring the Underground Railroad back. And this time it shouldn't have to be underground. Not as if it was literally then, but but still, we have to bring the network of freedom back, and where that means like people from all different races, ethnicities, socioeconomic classes, and people just want to come together and lock arms for the cause of freedom. And
the,
so
the Freedom Free Them Gala is this Friday.
It's this Friday at 6 p.m.
Niagara Falls Convention Center.
Absolutely.
How can people find out more?
They can go on our website at www.projectbonushouse.com. Now, we will be shutting ticket sales off tomorrow. Our gala always sells out. We could actually be sold out now. And that's why I was talking to Saladin. I'm just like, that's why I keep looking at my phone. Like, I hope we oversold last year. And the venue was like, Kelly. So, but I'm happy that we sell out.
Of course.
You know, that's a good problem to have.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, again, more people learning about the cause and more people realizing that human trafficking doesn't just happen overseas, but it's happening in Western New York. And you can do something about it.
Yeah. I wanted to switch gears here before we run out of time, because this time is flying by. Saladin, you are now Professor Saladin at Niagara University. That's a nice sound to it, but it's your classwork is a fascinating subject matter.
So I'm an adjunct professor at Niagara University, and I teach alongside my colleague, Dr. Dave Riley, in the political science department, and the course is Organizing and Advocating for Justice. So,
how fitting, right?
It sounds like they got the right person for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they started in the fall, or?
Yep.
Okay.
So it's a fall course that's offered.
So you've had a chance to see the students go through it. It must be done. Your classwork's done?
Yep, just about a week ago.
Okay.
We just concluded
this
semester.
So what did you see from your students during this semester?
Wow. So one of the first things is it feels good to be back in the classroom. I haven't been in a classroom in a few years now. I was teaching in the Niagara Falls School District, and I've never taught on a collegiate level. So it was a beautiful experience. One of the things that I said coming into the door is I let the students know that it was my job to radicalize them.
Yeah.
To think outside of the box of any kind of institution, and to think about how you can connect your degree to being an upstander and someone that is making a contribution to this society. It's easy to just get money, you know? And you have to really think about what is it that you have as a gift, and what can you cultivate as a gift to make sure that you bring some more beauty into this world, as opposed to just leaving the things that are broken, because there are many people who are going to leave this world broken.
Yeah.
And they don't care about providing a way for those who are coming behind them. And it's important for them to have that kind of perspective, because we trust them, we depend on them, and the world will literally be in their hands. And if they're not organizing or advocating for something, somebody is going to organize you and have you advocating for something.
That's right.
And it may not align with your principles and values. So it's better for you to be intentional about organizing around ideas that mean something to you, that's going to have a significant impact in this world. So yes, it was pretty cool. You know, I had a great time.
That's quite a way of looking at it, that if you don't organize around your principles, or other people's principles are going to organize around you. I'm paraphrasing to a certain extent. And as you said that, 40 years of my professional life just flashed before my eyes. But so what about did you get a sense that this meaning was penetrating, that kids were like, hey, I can maybe do this, or what did you get a sense of that at all?
Yeah, because the coursework was not just based upon taking tests. I told them, your test is going to be when you leave this classroom.
All right.
And you have actual lived experience. You know, there's a difference between the map and the terrain. You typically learn about the map in school, but I came to present you with what this terrain looks like. And it was mostly based upon facilitated dialogue, conversational. You know, they had an essay that they had to complete by the end of the classroom. And it wasn't about, you know, what it is that they want to tell me. But what are you putting this pen to paper to tell yourself? Because you are committing yourself to an idea of something that you can see that would be possible to bring some more beauty into this world. So just having those type of conversations and interactions, because a lot of the students, they would typically never come across me before. So now they had an opportunity to engage me and to talk to me about things that I've experienced and to pose certain questions to me about things that they may be considering or wanting to further explore.
What experiences intrigue them? I mean, you must have gotten a sense, especially if they're asking questions. Like, something you shared with them, and it lit a fire.
Oh, wow. So we went on a field trip to Love Canal.
Oh.
And we had Luella Kenny, who was an advocate when Love Canal first started, and she literally lost her 7-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And she's been an advocate her entire life. And her background, ironically enough, is she's a scientist by trade, and she talked about the pushback that she got from the government and others who not only wanted to discount her as a woman, but also her profession. She was literally testing the water and the soil, knowing for a fact what the residents there in Love Canal were being exposed to and was being dismissed. Mm. And most of the students, by not only talking to her, but literally going to Love Canal and not see one historic marker there to tell about the history of this, which literally changed the landscape of America. That in itself was just one experience that was mind-blowing for a lot of the students, some who even lived in proximity to this community and knew nothing about it. So we had indigenous people come and present about boarding schools and their experiences. We had other different presenters come in to talk about white supremacy. We had a variety of different people who were subject matter experts that talked to the students about their experiences and for them to actually engage them to get more insight into this. So, you know, they definitely left that class transformed.
Wow.
And responsible for what they had just been exposed to, because they can't unknow what they now know.
Wow. Wow. That sounds like you actually have a full curriculum there, not just one course.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We've got about 4 minutes left. We started off talking about Africa. Well, let's finish talking about Africa. Mm-hmm. All right. First of all, are you going to do this again next year?
Yes.
Yes.
We're both say yes.
It. Yeah.
All right.
So we're planning to leave the United States at August 3rd.
Okay.
And the trip would be around $3,000, and that will include your safari, your trip to Zanzibar, a trip to Aquila Primary School, a wonderful experience at the Eco Banana Farm, with a personalized and private dinner with dance and live. You get to see your food actually be cooked. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful experience, and mm-hmm. to have private dinners curated by amazing chefs off the coast of Zanzibar. You get to look out on the ocean at night, and so And then just traveling with Saladin and myself, and it's just going to be
fun. Obviously, we've run out of things to talk about.
It's going
to
be fun. yeah. So we definitely want people to come, and if they want more information, hopefully we'll have that out in the next like week or two, mm-hmm. maybe after the gala.
Yeah.
And so they can
through Project Mona's House or
it'd be probably on both of our social medias, okay. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. Saladin Alaa on Facebook and Kelly Diane also on Facebook, and we'll also probably post it on the Project Mona's House page mm-hmm. At the bottom. So come with us to Africa. So I really hope that people will challenge themselves to want to experience this. And I don't want to call it a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because I want it to be a seed of a lifetime
sure.
that will yield an amazing harvest of desire and exploration in the lives of people who come.
Yeah, and then a part of it, too, is the reason that we emphasize the importance of our youth going is because we want them to take ownership of this.
Yes.
So that they can coordinate it and they can plan it and they have the experience to be able to bring others with them. Well, we don't necessarily have to go. We entrust our younger generation with the ability to do the same thing to make it accessible to others.
How big of a group do you think you could take?
Wow, so.
our last group was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think depending on the type of vehicles, we try to stay in increments of 8.
Yes.
Okay.
Because safari vans fit 8 people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right.
Yeah, so we've been doing it in cohorts of 8. Yeah. So maybe you want to travel with us as well.
I would love that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, August 3rd, I'll have to make sure that my wife's birthday is taken care of, but.
we left on my birthday this year.
Oh, is that
so,
right?
Yeah, uh-huh. I was in the air August 13th this year, so.
Okay, so you're a Leo, just like my wife, huh?
Oh, my maybe goodness. That's a good thing.
I want to go on vacation. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It really is a fascinating conversation, and I hope a lot of folks follow up and find out more about it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in and talking to us. And, you know, I think we could probably pick up this conversation and have a fresh one again.
Definitely.
Down the road. All right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Saladin Allah and Kelly Diane Galloway with us here on What's Next. Again, thanks for being with us this morning. This is WBFO and WBFO HD1 Buffalo, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown, your NPR station.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.